T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
It's like a national holiday around here. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. First day of the NCAA tournament kicks off in earnest on the men's side. And we couldn't be more excited. We got donuts on the way. We got Chris Walker on the way. We've got final brackets to fill out. And just a quick programming note, if you want to join our bracket, our pal Nick in Texas does a great job. CBSSports.com. It's called Pearl Jam Season 3.
It is only a little disappointing. I've not complained once about us switching from afternoons to mornings. It is disappointing that I can't shirk my work responsibilities to watch NCAA tournament, because I've been doing that my whole life. There's nothing better than pretending to work and actually watching games on your computer, or calling in sick so you can watch games. The fact that we're actually going to be off after the show, but man, I have a date with my couch, Maggie. I will not be interrupted for many, many hours.
All right. Well, let's get some more in-depth analysis. Let's go to Chris Walker, who we absolutely love. A former head coach, Texas Tech, but spent many, many years an assistant coach in college hoops. Has worked for both the big-time programs and the mid-major programs, and has a perfect perspective on this tournament. Chris, thanks so much for the time today. We love watching you inside college hoops on CBS Sports Network. How you doing?
How you guys doing this morning?
Okay, here's one for you. We're doing great. But here's one for you. So last night, Coach, we saw Grambling play their way into the field of 64. And they're going to go up against one of the top seeds in this tournament, Purdue. And right after the game, you heard Seth Davis and others saying, uh-oh, this Grambling team looks a lot like Fairleigh Dickinson, FDU, who upset Purdue last year in the first round. What did you see? Should Purdue be on extra special high alert playing against Grambling?
Listen, Purdue has lost the double-digit seeds the last three tournaments. I've gone on record saying that Matt Painter cannot return to West Lafayette. He's going to have to find a new Starbucks if they lose again. I like this Grambling team. Their experience. The coach is from the Midwest, so he went to Wisconsin, Milwaukee, so he knows the Purdue program, shall I say. He's familiar. First time ever, Eddie Robinson and Willis Reed are shining down right now in Grambling State. You never know what could happen, Maggie and Pearl, but I think Purdue is a team of destiny right now, and that is a unbelievable. That would be a prognostication of mass proportion if Grambling State was able to pull it off. But certainly there is some drama around it for sure, just because of what Purdue has done the last three tournaments.
Chris, I saw you on CBS Sports Network talking about Virginia not looking good in sort of the play-in game. And maybe, to me, I took it as a reflection on the ACC as a whole. I'm looking at my bracket, and I do not feel good about that North Carolina one seed. Am I right about that?
Listen, you're right. I mean, the ACC has not looked great. I mean, think about it. You know, in our lifetime, the ACC has been the preeminent conference, with all the great players they've had and great teams. And think about this, North Carolina, we're talking about they're a number one overall seed, and we're saying because of the way Virginia performed, and I think they should not have gotten in, that we think the ACC may be a weaker league, and at the end of the day, North Carolina's a number one overall seed. Yes, you should be worried, and the reason that you should be worried, and shout out to Hubert Davis, who's done a tremendous job of coming back from not going to the tournament to being the team that won the league outright. I don't know how great Duke is. They're not the toughest team, even though they're talented. And North Carolina, even though they brought in Cormac Ryan and Harrison Ingram and Armando Baker, I think he's been in college 20 years, and R.J. Davis is great. They did do great after losing Caleb Love. The thing is, for me, with Alabama being in that region, they'd have to face them in the Sweet 16. I think Alabama has enough of a high-potent offense and enough experience to take down North Carolina. That game will be first one to 100.
Coach Chris Walker is joining us inside College Basketball, CBS Sports Network. You're not worried about Alabama doesn't really play defense, Coach. You don't think that's going to bite them in this tournament?
See, think about it. You know, I'm an analytics guy to the T, but sometimes the numbers don't say it all. What people don't know is Alabama is one of the best two-point defending teams in that league. And what they do best is they fool you in the second half. So my thing is the fact that they may not play a lot of defense, but in this tournament, notice now, Grambling State did come back last night. When you get ahead, and all these games are going to be really tight, you know, no matter what the scoring averages are, you know, and I know a lot of people may be betting and looking at, you know, the line and all that, but at the end of the day, the margins are going to tighten. With this Alabama team, they scored 100 points nine times this year. Nine times. The only team that scored second to that is Arizona. I think they've scored 107 times. It is very difficult with that much firepower. You're going to have to be in the 80s. Maybe they won't score 100. They lead the the nation in scoring with 90 a game. Let's say they score 80. It's really hard for another team to score 80 in the NCAA tournament. They may not play a lot of defense, and I think that, you know, again, that's only because they play so many possessions and they play so fast and they don't have a legit shot blocker. But they have so many weapons, all right, and they have so many transfers that are just older kids. And Nate Oates is a terrific coach, and he just got a nice little bag, so don't feel bad about him. He's got a lot of money and a couple more years on his contract. But I just think this team last year, after having Brandon Miller being a number one seed and what they did last year, this follow-up is a tremendous job by him. But I love the Crimson Tide.
Talking to Chris Walker, CBS Sports Network, former coach. All right, Chris, the SEC has a lot of teams here, and we're talking about Alabama. I ask you, which SEC team are you most confident in could go the farthest here?
You know, it's interesting that you just said Alabama, and I have three SEC teams going to the Final Four.
Whoa.
Matter of fact, that's the last time that happened. I'm a Villanova guy. I'm still licking my wounds after we lost to VCU last night in the NIT. But we use your fixture in this event. But I have three teams going to the Final Four. That hasn't happened since 85 when St. John's, Villanova, and Georgetown went to Lexington. And the only reason, to be honest with you, that I didn't have all four teams coming from the SEC is I have Baylor beating Alabama in the Elite Eight. So I have Auburn, I have Kentucky, and I have Tennessee and Baylor in my Final Four. Auburn losing to Tennessee in the Final Four. I think Rick Barnes, old Rocky Top, gets it done with Dalton Connect, who is a tremendous story in college basketball, the transfer from Northern Colorado, being the SEC Player of the Year, having a fantastic year.
Coach Chris Walker joining us. Is Dalton Connect the best player in this tournament?
That's a stretch. I'm going to give that to Zach Edey, who's the first two-time, who will be, shall I say, the first two-time back-to-back Player of the Year in the nation since Ralph Sampson, since a long time ago. I think he's the most unstoppable force, and it's produced the biggest story. You said Dalton Connect the best. I think he's probably the second best. I mean, he is very, very good. I mean, I'm just scrolling through my brackets right now. There are a ton of really good players, but Dalton Connect probably is other than Tucker DeBreeze, he's another very, very good player. I like Tyler Kolick. Hopefully he's healthy for Marquette. Another player that people don't talk a lot about, shall I say, who plays for the number one overall seed is Tristan Newton, who's the engine that makes UConn go. So there are a ton of really good players, but I'd say Zach Edey is probably the best.
Coach, I had a thought about Zach Edey yesterday, and, you know, he's a two-time unanimous All-American, and he'll be the two-time Player of the Year, and he's got two tournament wins to show for it, and his team has lost to three double-digit seeds. He was a freshman for the North Texas one, so maybe we'll forgive that, but he's been the focal point of a team that's lost to two double-digit seeds in his sophomore and junior year. If he doesn't have a big tournament, can't you say his career was a disappointment?
I mean, he's going to be the two-time Player of the Year, Naismith Player of the Year, so I wouldn't say individually it's a disappointment. Obviously, you know, a lot of kids, you know, think about it. I'm a big LeBron fan.
Yeah.
And I'm one of those guys, and you guys may shun me for this, that thinks LeBron is better than Jordan. But at the end of the day, I lose the argument based on championships, no matter what his numbers are. Same thing with Zach Edey. It doesn't matter if he was the player of the year twice. I'm sure he's going to look at his career and say, if we don't get to at least the Elite Eight. And Matt Painter as well. You had the most unstoppable force in college basketball for the last 3 to 4 years probably. And all you can show for is double-digit losses every single year as far as the seeds that they've lost to. So absolutely there's a ton of pressure on him, because when you look back at your career, like even when I go out or when I'm around, people always ask. They never say, hey, how many points did you score in the Big East, right? Then they say, hey, I know you played against Alonzo and Dikembe or Derek Coleman and Sherman Douglas. They always say, how far did you guys go in the tournament? They ask that every single time. And I'm like, that's when you mumble, because that's all people want to know this time of year. Did you guys get to Elite Eight? And you know what they don't know, Maggie Pearl? How freaking hard it is. That's what they don't understand. So, yes, Purdue, with the type of teams they have this year, if they cannot make a run, and you already prefaced this conversation by saying they're playing Grambling State, if they lose to a team from the SWAC, now, I might add, just for context here, the SWAC played against the Pac-12 last year, right, in a head-to-head tournament, and it was almost 500, right, because they get a lot of transfers with the transfer portal. They have a lot of older kids, and they basically played 500 against the Pac-12. So you fast forward to this team that Dante Jackson has, and that team last year won 24 games. They just didn't win the AQ. You have a lot of those same kids back. They're not going to be afraid, and they very well could take down this team. And it would not be the story. It'd be a great tagline, and everyone would laugh. But I honestly think Matt Painter is a tremendous coach, and I make light of what's going on. But, again, and not to rail against Grambling State, because I love for them to be successful as well, a great program from the SWAC. But I want Purdue to advance. Let's stop this narrative. But they got to take care of business, guys.
Chris, let me ask the same question for Caitlin Clark on the women's side. Does she need to get at least back to the Final Four to sort of complete this story that we've all been following so closely? Or has she already established her legacy as one of the great stars of college basketball?
You know what, that's a tremendous story. Think about what she has done. And, you know, I tell people, like, forget about the points. I mean, that is a fantastic thing. And here's the thing. She did it in 4 years. She could come back. She could score 4,000 points, where it would be untouchable, you know, to a degree. But she's done it on the assist level as well. I know for all of the TV stakes that's involved, everybody that has a stake in it, TV-wise, shall I say, that's something that we talk about all the time. Those ratings would go through the roof, unfortunately, put LSU and Iowa in the same region. But think about it. If an Iowa-South Carolina matchup came, it would probably be one of the most viewed TV ratings, sports events, probably in a very long time. And that's one of the things I talked about is I wish that the women's Final Four and men's Final Four were in the same area, because the men's, we'd never get to watch the women live. You know, we always have, it's the same weekend, and the games are happening in alternate days. But will it be a disappointment for a career? Absolutely not. What she's done is unbelievable, men or women. And she's that good. And I think that she's going to be that good in the WNBA, and she's going to be missed. But think about it. She is must-see TV. Right now, think about this. If you put a men's game next to a women's game and Iowa's playing, they sell out every single game that they play, whether it's on the road or at home. There is not one team, right? Maybe Carolina, maybe Duke, because people hate them so much. But other than that, and maybe Arizona and the Pac-12, because they're a great draw when they go on the road. What men's team, right, or what player on the men's side, even though we just talked about Zach Edey being the player of the year, I mean, they're not necessarily going to sell out if Zach Edey shows up. But when Caitlin Clark shows up, right, that ticket goes up, you know, exponentially. She is must-see TV and great for the college basketball game, men or women.
Coach, thank you so much for the time. Chris Walker, Inside College Basketball, CBS Sports Network. Enjoy day one in earnest of the men's side of the tournament. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate that, Chris Walker.
I mean, there's no doubt about what he just said. Caitlin Clark is going to outrate any other individual on the men's side. I don't even think that debate is passed.
I think so. I mean, you and I will disagree about what she needs to do in this tournament. I mean, that's where you and I differ. Yes, the legacy is there, of course. Now, Chris made an interesting point that if she had come back for the fifth season does she score 4,000 points and put herself totally out of reach in terms of the record book. But I think she does have to do something in this tournament.
Well, I think the reason for me, Pete Maravich is on every all-time college basketball list, and he didn't even make the tournament, right. I believe. He did nothing but lose. She at least already made her final game. I think that the Caitlin Clark story has already been written. So will we ding her if she loses? I don't think so. I agree with Chris. It's already this great story, and we're just excited for her in the WNBA. But you're tough. You're tough, Maggie.
Listen, I'm tough just because we're putting the highest possible accolades on her.
Right.
You know, and so if this is, great story, it's like, no, we're talking about a transformative player. We're talking about somebody who, you know, she's not the only one, but somebody who is completely, you know, changed how we think of women's college basketball and where women can shoot from and the type of, you know, attention that they can draw. I think, and they're a one seed. So it's not like I'm saying, hey, you know, this is like weird abstraction. No, they're a great team. And I don't know if she goes out in the first or second round, which I don't think is going to happen.
Yeah.
If she goes out in the first or second round, I mean, that's a college career that ends with a whimper.
Right, but she's got this big showdown with LSU. If she loses that game, I think you could forgive her because LSU is still a very good team. And also, she'll be double-digit underdog against South Carolina again.
Right.
So I think that's the other thing. Like, we have this juggernaut on the women's side right now, which is also a big story.
Don't forget, LSU has to meet up with UCLA first, who's the two seed in that region. So we hope we get this LSU-Iowa.
I know.
A couple of things standing in the way.
I just assume we'll get the story we want, which is LSU-Iowa.
855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. All right, coming up, Thursdays, usually at the top of the hour, but we had to make room for Coach Walker. We were happy to do it. It's the multiverse of Maggie and Perloff. I'm excited about this one. This combines all the things we love about what ifs and what could be's in sports, and we apply it to the NCAA tournament. We'll do that next. Maggie and Perloff, CBS Sports Radio.
Exploring sports' biggest what-ifs and could-have-beens. Let's dive into the multiverse of Maggie and Perloff.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Wesley Financial. Stuck in a timeshare and want out? Contact Wesley Financial Group now and get a free timeshare exit information kit at wesleyfinancialgroup.com. All right, this week's multiverse, we're always sort of tied into the news, so I think we got to go college basketball this week.
Yeah, college basketball, and we tie in a little NBA. So today's version of the multiverse of Maggie and Perloff, what if LeBron James had gone to Duke?
Oh!
So Duke was on the final three finalists, if you believe one version of how LeBron tells this story, was Ohio State, Duke, and North Carolina were the final three. He's changed this a couple times over the years. But
in 2022, he said it was Duke and North Carolina. He kind of canceled out Ohio State. So we'll see.
So if LeBron James had gone to Duke, that's the topic for the multiverse today, one of sports' greatest what-ifs and what could have been. Perloff, what is the world like if LeBron had gone to Duke?
Okay, so who were his teammates at Duke that year?
Okay, so
this
would be the 2002-2003 NCAA tournament. So this is a team that's led by J.J. Redick and Chris Duhon. You'll remember it's the J.J. Redick, Chris Duhon, Sheldon Williams version of Duke.
Right, and Dante Jones, one of the great dunkers in college and pro history, I think was on that team. Okay, so I'm going to say Duke wins a title. I'm not even going to focus on it. J.J. and LeBron start an insufferable podcast 5 years earlier because they're best friends. And
we'd be on 20 years of that insufferable podcast.
Yes. So I'm not going to focus on the Duke side, but it'd have incredible ramifications in this multiverse. That means that LeBron is not the number one pick in the 2003 NBA draft. Cleveland, of course, picked LeBron, changed the fortunes, not only that team, but that city, you could argue. They get Carmelo Anthony instead. Now, Darko Milicic went number two to Detroit. I don't think Cleveland would have taken Darko. I think they would have taken Carmelo. I know that's a little bit of a stretch. You could just move up that draft. Darko, of course, won the all-time famous bust. So Melo goes to Cleveland, which means that Cleveland does not have their run of trips to the NBA Finals. That's not happening because Melo is just not as good as LeBron. So Cleveland continues on their hard luck road. Sorry, EJ, I know you love Carmelo. Now, that pushes LeBron to the 2004 draft. Now, that was a funny draft. Dwight Howard went number one to Orlando. We're going to have to assume, as great as Dwight Howard was, he falls to number two behind LeBron James.
Yep.
That means we have a real force in Orlando because the Magic front office was able to build a great team around Dwight Howard. If LeBron had had the team around him that Dwight Howard had, Hedo Turkoglu and all those guys, LeBron is actually winning titles in the East and does not have to go to Miami in his famous 2010 free agency. That means Orlando's a consistent powerhouse. There are no Heatles with Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh. I don't even know if there's no back to Cleveland because I don't think he's tied to Cleveland in that way. And I don't even know if there are Lakers. I think you are looking at the greatest Orlando Magic player of all time, LeBron James, and everything looks different. He might have more titles, believe it or not, because I think he would have been on a stronger team. I think one of the reasons LeBron didn't get early titles was problems with the Cavs franchise. He doesn't have those same problems. And we're talking really, really chasing Michael Jordan in that ring count. He is chasing him. I think he gets him if he went to Duke for a year. And not only that, he's more famous early in his career because I think he sort of lacked that. Maybe this is a stretch, but he would have been a must-see TV at Duke. Zion Williamson, must-see TV at Duke. He would have been a gigantic superstar coming into the NBA. He was already a big star. It would have been even bigger, would have added to the lore. I think that he has caught Michael Jordan in rings if he never had to go to Cleveland. So this would be such a huge decision for the history of the NBA.
It's a great what ifs, what could have been. That's the multiverse of Maggie and Perloff. We do this every Thursday right around this time. And today's question we're asking, what if LeBron James had gone to Duke? Duke was one of the final three teams that if he had gone to college instead of going straight to the NBA from St. Vincent, St. Mary, that he would have gone to Duke. Now, that's a great multiverse. Can we just play this out a little bit, though? If Carmelo Anthony, who won a title at Syracuse in 2002-2003, let's say that LeBron wins that title.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So I believe, though, that Melo would have won the year before. So Melo still goes number one. You're right. To Cleveland. I think he goes one. I think Darko goes two to Detroit because Darko and Detroit, I think that was always fated to happen. I don't know why. They still won a title despite that bad draft pick. So that means Chris Bosh would go to Denver, and that means Dwayne Wade goes to Toronto. And it's kind of that as a little bit of a what if, because I think Dwayne Wade ends up, if he doesn't go to Miami and get that first title early in 2005-2006 with Shaquille O'Neal, does Dwayne Wade suffer the same fate as some other very talented Toronto Raptors? I know Bosh got himself out to go play with the Heatles, but the Vince Carters and the Tracy McGrady's and guys who were all-time great players but never could really recognize, never get themselves to a winning situation, partly because their careers in Toronto, no disrespect to Toronto, but would we have had Dwayne Wade saying, hey, everyone, come play with me? Now, maybe he would have said, come play with me in Orlando. So if we're doing this multiverse of Maggie and Perloff, a what if, what could have been, LeBron James goes to Duke. A couple other things. You're right. He would go to Orlando the next year. I think you're a little high on how good the Orlando Magic franchise would have been. Now, they made a finals. They made one finals with Stan Van Gundy, J.J. Redick also on that team, right?
That team was sick.
Okay. The Orlando Magic had Shaq and Penny once upon a time,
right?
Couldn't keep Shaq.
Yeah.
To think that they would have been able to keep LeBron James and LeBron wouldn't have also left to go to the Los Angeles Lakers or something else, I think is a bit of a stretch to me. I still think LeBron would have played on multiple teams like he has now. Again, we're doing the multiverse. This is what if LeBron James had gone to Duke for a season and then gone to the NBA. I don't know. It would have pushed back his draft year 1 year, and he would have been in theory, selected by the Orlando Magic in the 2004 draft instead of Cleveland in 2003. Can I give you another one here?
Yes.
Okay, so if in this multiverse, LeBron James goes to Duke and wins a title.
Mm-hmm.
We said the J.J. Redick, Chris Duhon, that iteration. He goes to Duke and wins a title. He comes into the NBA as a winner. Like Carmelo Anthony came into the NBA as a winner with a reputation of being able to win. I think it takes, quite frankly, a lot of pressure off of LeBron's early career of the, are you ever going to win? Are you not? Now, I know Michael Jordan won in college, and he still had that pressure. But I don't, to win in the NBA, I don't know if LeBron feels this desperation, at least early on, that caused him to switch teams. Because he said in Cleveland, I don't want to be 30 years old with bad knees and no rings and create the super team. I wonder if some of that pressure is mitigated because you're considered a winner because you won at Duke.
Absolutely. I mean, winning at Duke would have changed everything for Carmelo Anthony. you know,
to win at Syracuse.
To win at Syracuse. Yep. So I think that's a good point. The other rap on LeBron, I don't know how it would affect this. Early in his career, he was afraid to take the big shot. Does that change with a year under Coach K? Probably not, but regardless, what's wrong with that Orlando Magic? I'm looking back at this Orlando Magic team. I think they might have been better than I thought. I mean, worse than I thought. They had Rashard Lewis, Hedo Turkoglu, Jameer Nelson. You're telling me LeBron couldn't carry that team to a few rings?
No, but you're acting like the Orlando Magic are like the Boston Celtics of this like stable franchise, you know, with this tradition of winning. I mean, Shaquille O'Neal bolted the moment he could.
You know, it would have helped our multiverse, too. What if he had gone to the West? What if he had been a Clipper, was number two in 2004? What if LeBron had ended up in L.A.? Because you never know how the balls are going to bounce in the lottery. I think that would have been a totally different trajectory for LeBron, too. A more competitive West, maybe bigger market. What if he had become a Clipper? Conceivable in 2004. They had the number two pick. They traded out.
Yeah, they traded Charlotte, right?
Yeah. And by the way, what if Charlotte had gotten LeBron? Do they still have the Bobcats? Because I don't remember exactly what happened there, but that's not the team that's there now.
What if Charlotte got Dwight Howard? I mean, that also could have been great, too. Yeah. He could have been a centerpiece and a focal point of that franchise. So, although Charlotte really likes guys from college. So this is, the multiverse of Maggie and Perloff. We sports what ifs and what could have been. Today, we're asking, what if LeBron James had gone to Duke?
The ultimate scenario, 2004, guess who sat number three? The Chicago Bulls. Now, that would have just been too much.
They took Ben Gordon, right?
What if LeBron James was in Chicago.
to chase Jordan in Jordan City.
I mean, if he had gone to Chicago, that would be the ultimate sports story.
Oh, that's another one. If LeBron James had gone to Duke in this multiverse, how much does that rivalry get ratcheted up even just a little bit because of the Duke-North Carolina thing?
Yeah, that's probably true. And also,
I mean, they're totally different generations, but still.
A lot of people hate LeBron now. Oh, God, would they hate him?
That is the part where I will disagree.
Why?
I think if LeBron ended up on Duke, Duke loses a lot of his villain status.
Because LeBron was so loved.
He's very polarizing. At that time, everybody loved LeBron James.
Bill Walton's doing his high school games on ESPN.
He was the chosen one.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said all the right things. He did all the right things. He played the right way. I think similar to how Zion for like a year kind of had people kind of confused about what to think of Duke. If you had someone as likable as LeBron James at that time playing for Duke, I think that you have a generation of young kids who are Duke fans and that are now millennials that are adults that don't look at Duke as this villainous team. Mm.
Totally disagree, because everyone went right back to hating Duke after Zion left.
Zion ain't LeBron.
But it's easy to compartmentalize. I mean, there were a lot of big popular superstars at Duke, and you could still hate Duke.
None of those guys are LeBron James.
Yeah,
you can name
LeBron.
Anybody.
But there are, there are a bunch of really high picks. I mean, Elton Brand was the number one pick, and nobody, you don't care. You still hate Duke. I disagree with that. And by the way, Zion wasn't LeBron, but he's one of the biggest things since LeBron.
Big superstar in college basketball, big icon as well, not LeBron James.
Obama came to Zion's game. Yeah, you're right. But still, I think the hatred for Duke runs way deeper. It goes way back to before you were even here.
Oh, no, so for sure.
I think it's, you could look at it one or two ways. Again, multiverse of Maggie and Perloff, what ifs and what could have been in sports. We do this every Thursday around this time. Today we're asking, what if LeBron James had gone to Duke? Either LeBron changes things and Duke becomes less of a villain and less hated throughout college basketball, or the flip side, people hate him more because he was part of the Duke machine.
Definitely.
And we never get the decision probably where people turn on him because of how he left Cleveland, yet he comes into the league with the black mark or the black hat or whatever we say about guys who went to Duke.
By the way, he's basically a Dukie right now. He just sat at a table with J.J. Redick with two bottles of some fancy wine and told us how he's smarter than everybody else at basketball. He might as well have gone to Duke. Well, What's the difference?
I will say this. I think you get an NIL quicker.
Oh, you got it. You got to pay him.
Could he have been caught up in a scandal?
No. I think he would push it.
Yeah, I agree.
He would really push it. You know how vocal he is on issues. He would push the NIL and get paid.
But back then, did he have his voice? I mean, we're assuming he only stays for a year. Remember when LeBron somehow got like a Hummer car?
Yeah, well, his mom gifted him a Hummer car.
Yeah.
We don't know how.
Where'd Gloria get that money?
How Gloria got it, but we just all moved on with our lives.
Enough people would have been in his ear.
Think
about
so?
It, I think.
Leon Rose was his first agent.
Right.
And no one's more powerful than him.
Yeah, but he also, Leon Rose didn't do jack squat about getting college players paid.
That is true. The other thing I thought that was interesting, you guys pulled from I'm very curious about the Dwight and Charlotte thing. I think that the Bobcats still exist.
I think that works.
That's
with
a
Dwight.
huge thing, because Okafor was good, but he just wasn't Dwight Howard, and that's why that franchise didn't last very long. Also, Dwayne Wade not going to the Heat.
It's a huge
what
if.
I'm going to go back on my soapbox. Heat culture does not exist if Dwayne Wade doesn't go to the Heat. Doesn't exist.
By the way,
because they had not won a title at that point until Dwayne Wade got there.
No, I know, but you did have Pat Riley. If it wasn't going to be Wade, would have been someone else. I don't know if Riley, that's like a who's more to, not blame, who's more to credit for Heat culture, is Riley or Wade?
We've never seen Pat Riley build a champion without Dwayne Wade.
Well, the Showtime Lakers.
No, I mean as a general manager.
Oh, right.
As a general manager, he's never done it without Dwayne Wade.
Got pretty close with the Knicks, but...
Right. And he had Patrick Ewing.
No, I know.
and he didn't build that team. Dave Chek has built that team.
Well.
So I think that Heat culture, we don't give Wade enough credit about how much Heat culture started with Dwayne Wade's buy-in. And if you don't have Dwayne Wade, you don't have that supernova. Dwayne Wade's a top five shooting guard of all time. You know, those guys don't just grow on trees. You're just going to find that guy somewhere else, and he's going to buy into the Heat culture they tried to establish as early as Dwayne Wade did.
Well, but I think it's very unlikely. I have a question, though. Maggie mentioned in her version that Vince Carter and Tracy McGrady didn't work out in Toronto. If you team them up with Pat Riley, do they eventually win a title? I think there is something to the Riley factor. And also, it's not a no-brainer that they would have taken Dwayne Wade at four. Dwayne Wade wasn't Dwayne Wade in that draft. He'd been in college a long time.
He was in the Final Four.
I know. That's what I mean. Like,
the tournament helped him a lot.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He wasn't like a friend. You know, back that was early on, one and done. The fact that he'd been in college.
No, high school.
Yeah.
It was prep to pro.
Right. The fact that he'd already been in college weakened him in the draft. I'm saying it was a no-brainer that he was four.
I would disagree with that. I think Dwayne Wade, he was elevated staying in college, because that Final Four
it did elevate him, but I still think teams were like, oh, they might have been interested in other players because he had hung around a little bit. I mean, that draft went high school, Europe, freshman, junior, and then he stood out a little bit.
But if I remember correctly, I don't have the draft in front of me. That draft was super top heavy. We talked about the greatest drafts ever, and what I remember was that it was a top five. We really weren't going beyond that in terms of, like, could someone made an idiotic choice and pick some freshman guy after that or high school guy? Sure, because the next freshman guy would have been TJ Ford. I mean, the guys that came after him were all, upperclassmen.
Big time college.
Chris Kamen, Kirk Heinrich, Michael Sweetney, Jarvis Hayes. Like, these are guys that were 4-year guys, too. I can't imagine those guys getting taken over Dwayne Wade.
But who
only takes one idiot general manager.
Okay. Who did the Raptors already had a shooting guard, probably. That's the other issue.
So, just again, this is the multiverse of Maggie and Perloff. You're like, why are they talking about the draft in 2003? The reason why is the multiverse is, what if LeBron James had gone to Duke and all of the tentacles that would have changed in basketball history because by that simple fact, both college and the NBA. Pat Boyle is here with headlines. Good morning, Pat.
Hey, yeah, it's become an all-out Seoul slugfest in South Korea. And just because I don't want to see Perloff be right, hopefully the Dodgers don't complete this comeback. Game two of the Major League Baseball season, it was 9-2 Padres. It's now 11-8 in the top of the seventh. MLB debut for Yoshi Yamamoto ended in a short whimper. Lasted just one inning, got smoked for 5 runs on 4 hits. We do have a home run finally. All these 19 runs, only one home run. Mookie Betts, a 400-foot shot. Shohei Ohtani, by the way, 1-for-3 with a run scored and an RBI. But the off-the-field news is the huge news. Should we get a quick recap, the cliff notes?
Go ahead.
So, yeah, Shohei Ohtani's interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara, fired after it was learned that at least $4.5 million in wire transfers were sent from Ohtani's bank account to a bookmaking operation based out of Southern California. There's a federal investigation regarding the offshore sports book allegedly led by Matthew Boyer. And as the story unfolded, it was learned the interpreter, Mizuhara, was the one who incurred the 7-digit gambling debt. Spokesperson for Ohtani initially said Ohtani transferred the funds to cover Mizuhara's debts. Mizuhara issued a statement that was then disavowed because Ohtani's lawyers then prepared a statement which alleged quote-unquote massive theft.
Right.
Basically saying, his longtime friend and interpreter robbed him of $4.5 million, got his bank account info, wired the money to cover his debts. So trying to rid Ohtani of any involvement in the matter.
That or told Ohtani it was for something else. Saying, hey, wire this money to Matt Boyer or whatever. No, he's not a bookmaker. He's buy me a house or something like that. Like, try to make it seem legit, and that would have been, like, robbing him, too. Who knows how this thing's going to end
up? This thing's going to unfold over the weeks, months, maybe. They're going to have to do a pretty thorough investigation, but it comes down to, was Ohtani aware that it's going to an offshore sports book? Because then that violates the MLB, MLBPA, CBA.
Oh,
and he has to be suspended.
There's a paper trail right now, if all this is right.
And if not,
that links him directly to a bookmaker.
And if not, which his lawyer said, no, that's not the story we're going with. He robbed you the money. Then his interpreter is going to get thrown in prison for embezzlement and wire fraud.
Definitely.
The MLB's place in this is interesting right now. Because I forgive me if I didn't hear this, but it sounds right now that he's not under investigation yet. Baseball.
No, I don't think they've issued a statement yet.
Yeah, believe me, baseball's going to take their sweet time with this one, considering he's the face of the league. They're not going to jump to any conclusion. This will not be Roger Goodell with Tom Brady and Deflategate. No way. They're going to slow play this thing, and the feds are basically busted the bookmaker, obviously, and then the bookmaker and all the associates are like, well, look who's been betting with me.
Yep.
And they'll get around to it.
Yeah. Well, maybe the Dodgers should fall on their sword and say, let's get the suspension out of the way early so he's not gone for the playoffs.
Nah.
I mean, they don't need Shohei, obviously.
They're not going to do that. The baseball is going to wait weeks for this federal investigation to go down. And then once they get presented with the facts, then they're probably going to do their own investigation.
Yeah, so you're saying it'll go to after. They can't have him gone in the playoffs.
Well, I don't think it's going to be up to them. I think Major League Baseball is going to suspend Ohtani
That. Yeah, I know, but Major League Baseball.
I don't think the Dodgers say, hey, Roger Goodell, we'll spend him now for 30 games, but let him play the playoffs.
Yeah, but Manfred can't risk this going into the postseason because the Dodgers are probably going to be there. They can't not have Shohei there. They got to do it either before or after the season.
I think
a year suspension. Well,
that's
going
to
say
it might be generous to think this is going to get wrapped up by the end of the season. How long do these cases take?
Yeah, you're right. Maybe show pushes till after the season.
That's what I bet they're hoping.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting timing. They really do need him on the field.
And they'll just play with the cloud of this over them.
This team is not a team I would point to and say mentally tough. Can overcome adversity. I would run away from picking them to win the World Series right now.
No, but that being said, they could trip into 105 wins without even breaking
sweat.
They don't need Ohtani for that either.
Good luck with them trying to overcome all this and that cloud going into the playoffs. There's no way I would trust them with
and
that.
And they could trip into a first round elimination usual.
But, and with Ohtani, they could still. And this is baseball. It doesn't matter who your stars are. Look at last year. I mean, anything could happen.
This nucleus, though, particularly given how talented they are, I don't think it's just luck that they don't get it done. I think there's something inside their chest that doesn't allow them to show up when they need to.
I think it's Dave Roberts. That's my opinion. I think he's a good manager, but I think that just something's not clicking with a little bit of an edge in that dugout.
Well, if they're lucky, maybe Dave Roberts was also making bets. Just kidding.
Last four games last night, the game between the 16 seeds, the Grambling Tigers beat the Montana State Bobcats 88-81 in OT. The battle of the 10 seeds, Colorado beat Boise State 60-53. Field of 64 is set. Madness starts in just under 4 hours. College football news. A few days ago, Ohio State running backs coach Tony Alford left the Buckeyes program to join none other than Sharon Moore in Michigan. The team up north steals Ohio State's running backs coach. Ryan Day was asked on Tuesday his level of concern that Tony Alford is now going to share Ohio State's game plans with Michigan.
You know, the run game will look different. It just will. And that's a long time and a long journey to get to next November. So, you know, I just think there's going to be so many twists and turns along the way.
How about that?
Well, Chip Kelly taking over as the offensive coordinator. So obviously things are going to look quite different, I would think, at Ohio State. And now you have somebody who's got a little intel from spring practices or even just a couple practices and then goes to Michigan with the info.
Oof. I've thrown out conspiracy theories in the past, and I guess I'll do one now. I think this was a long game.
What do you mean?
I think he was always in play to be Michigan.
Oh, yeah. Why didn't he stay longer is the question. Maybe he was afraid he was getting smoked out.
Can't get 100 on the test, right?
Yeah. Only stay for two practices and then leave.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I got incomplete notes. I got day one enough install. Day two, can't help you.
It's Ryan Day. Well, he wants to throw the ball 50 times anyway. Like, two practices on the running game is probably enough.
And by the way, I think the world figured out Chip Kelly about 11 years ago. I don't even think you need... That's just a fact. Whatever happened to Chip Kelly, the genius, I don't know.
Real quick, NBA last night, some of the scores we didn't get to. Warriors beat the Grizzlies 137-116. We could talk more about Draymond, another scuffle with him, and Desmond Bane.
Shocker.
Yeah, Jimmy Butler dropped 30. Heat go on the road and beat the Cavs 107-104. Some interesting JB Bickerstaff sound. Probably wait for next hour, talking about gamblers threatening his family.
Yeah, very a little on the nose for
big,
all these. What is in the water today? Yeah.
Big sports betting day as we're about to kick off March Madness when most people.
Which is literally the biggest sports betting day of the year. Wow. What did we learn? I don't know. We'll get more on Shohei Ohtani in just a moment. Don't move, Maggie and Pearl.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome back, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. We get more into the NCAA tournament in just a moment because tournament kicks off today in earnest, like a holiday for us around here. We've got the donuts. They've been delivered. Everything's all well and good. But, Perloff, we have this scandal in Major League Baseball that's exploding and unfolding in front of our very eyes, which is Shohei Ohtani's interpreter and a longtime friend and close acquaintance. This is someone in the inner circle for Ohtani, had racked up $4.5 million in illegal gambling, sports betting with a bookmaker in California, in Southern California. And Ohtani now, whether it was to cover for his friend's debts or some other reason, there is a link between Ohtani's personal bank account and paying off this this bookmaker to the tune of two separate $500,000 wire checks, basically, or wire transfers. And so this is the information we have now. We have no idea what's coming around the corner, but it's a huge story.
Yeah, I think we're in a bit of a dangerous area as a media here because somebody's got to come out and explain what's going on because right now you're left to your imagination to some extent.
Right.
It's very easy to assume the worst, which is that Shohei Ohtani knew exactly what the worst would be, that Shohei Ohtani was actually making the bets.
Right.
And that is not, right now that's not a huge leap, but it's irresponsible to say it's happening. That's the thing. Listen, whoever's running this show for Shohei has got to get his message out there very cleanly and succinctly right now. And that's tricky because obviously his interpreter is at the middle of this.
Yeah, communication has been an issue, obviously.
And I think the Dodgers and MLB also have to make statements sooner rather than later.
Listen, I don't know what that will do. I don't know what that will do. We need the bookmaker got busted. And so that's why this whole thing is being investigated. And that's how the cover gets blown on the interpreter. This was not 2 days ago, Perloff, on Tuesday in South Korea, we're seeing the interpreter and Shohei laughing around in the dugout. He was still an employee of the Dodgers up until 2 days ago. And then on Wednesday, he gets fired after a mea culpa from the interpreter comes to the team and says, hey, I'm a degenerate gambler and I've racked up all these debts. And he gets fired. And then Shohei, then the story changes. Then the interpreter's walking back the story. Oh, wait a minute. Actually, Shohei didn't know anything about my gambling debts. He's been completely in the dark and I've been stealing from him.
You know, now that you say it like that, too, there is a chance that this story gets so confusing the public
turns away.
That doesn't really like. If I'm Shohei, I want to create chaos around this story. I want everyone to be like, "Wait, what exactly happened?" And I think maybe the language difference will help him do that. Shohei can distance himself from this, and he will try. I'm telling you right now, he's going to have a crisis team. I'm assuming they'll hire a crisis team, or they should. And there's going to be all sorts of ramifications here. Shohei's going to say, like, I didn't know this, I knew that. I'll bet you the story changes 50 times.
Yeah, but sometimes just saying I didn't know is not a defense. You know, ignorance might not be a defense. If you're cutting somebody two checks for $500,000 each, it's reasonable to assume you would know where that money's going. I know it doesn't happen. I know people get scammed all the time, even by people close to them. I get it. But I think a court of law might tell you, hey, you're cutting checks for $500,000. You should know where that money's going.
Right.
You're an adult.
That's all fine. Right. But don't you think that Shohei can at least create some doubt about what he knew?
Listen, if a guy comes out and said, I stole his passwords on his laptop, I got into his bank account.
I would think he already had his passwords because Shohei has shared his whole life with this guy.
Yeah, I think, that's where I might draw a line. I don't know. You can be great friends with somebody. Like, you and I are great friends. We work together every day. I would trust you. I would trust you with my bank accounts, but you don't have my bank account information.
Yes, I have some of your other passwords, and I apologize in advance.
Lululemon passwords, maybe?
What's that?
Pants. Lululemon passwords.
Yeah. That's who's been racking up the charges in my Lululemon account.
I'm not even kidding. I do know more of your passwords.
You do
than
know
you
a
know.
Lot.
Yeah.
Because I'm more than willing to share all of my online newspaper passwords.
But you've already made a leap. This person speaks for you as an interpreter. You've already made an incredible, you've handed him a lot of your life.
Sure.
You've put incredible trust into this person to speak for you. So he's already displayed how close they are. There's a chance it went much deeper. I actually think that Shohei's got to portray himself as a victim here.
No, he does, but it also seems a little beyond belief that he wouldn't know that this guy has at least some kind of gambling problem. I know that's hard because it's a sickness.
And you're right.
People can hide it, but if you're that close to have your bank account information, don't you want to know if the guy's betting on the Horizon men's basketball tournament? Anyway, coming up, we've got our burning questions about the NCAA tournament.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.